Well, welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting. It is 4 p.m. On Monday, September 8th, 2025. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I do like to share a few helpful tips for everyone who is joining on the phone calls. If you'd like to make comments, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. For everyone who is on the video conference, you can apologies. I just want to go back and state one more helpful tip for people who are on phone calls. If you'd like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hand by pressing star 9. everybody who's on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you'd like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing, by clicking on the raise hand icon. If people are able to use these tools, it will be helpful because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. I do request everyone to please stay on mute unless speaking because it helps eliminate all the external noise. As you know, we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. So we request for each member who speaks, please state your name before your comments. We do welcome one speaker at a time because it helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It's also helpful for people who are calling and listening onto the meetings through phone calls. When people listen to the meeting audio, it's also helpful for them to understand clearly who the speakers were and their comments. We request anyone who speaks to please describe themselves briefly when initially speaking. For instance, I'm a female, I'm Asian Indian, I wear reading glasses, I'm wearing a black, yellow, and cream color top today. We do have guest speakers today, and I do remind them and again request that if you do decide to use a presentation, please describe your slides. That is for the convenience of our members who are blind or have low vision, or any members of the public who may be joining this meeting. It will be very helpful for them. Chair Kala, Chair Calabia,
You now alert.
At this point, if you concur, I
You
can go
are.
ahead and read the meeting agenda and then go through the roll call of the committee members.
Alert. Michael Welsh has joined the meeting. Alert. Samsung SM.
At the moment, I don't even see Patrick.
Okay, Patrick is on. But I can, before I start reading the agenda, I will share my screen. So if you would give me just a quick moment, and when my screen is visible with agenda on it, if somebody can confirm, I will appreciate that.
I see it.
Okay, thank you. So as soon as I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approving today's meeting agenda and last meeting minutes, which are going to be from July 2025. We have invited Ifan Apanti from Prince George's County to discuss an update about their bus service. So we look forward to listening from him and any of his team members if they join. We are going to receive information about Navy Yard elevator and escalator capital project from the Ellis team. We invited Mitch Nietzsche, Ronaldo Grimaldi, and I believe Mr. Grimaldi will be joining to give us that information. The committee was interested in discussing the next big transportation bill, which will be the third topic of discussion today. 5:45 is when we begin the public comment section, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I'm going to stop sharing my screen now, and we will begin the roll call of the committee members. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. I believe Vanessa is connected with us. Rico Dancy.
Full speech.
Okay. Rico is going to be a little late joining the meeting. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Present.
Alert. F and F and T.
Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Kaffin. Steve informed that he may not be able to join today. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Swatha Nandakumar. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Sarah Rott.
Present, and you sound great today.
Thank you, Sarah. Good to hear the confirmation. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Paul Summerford. Patrick Sheehan.
Well, I'm sorry.
Patrick.
Here. I'm
Thank
sorry.
you. And Philip Weintraub. Okay. Just want to state for the record that some of the members have informed us that they may not be able to join the meetings for some time due to medical reasons. So we do have their information on record. Okay. Chair Calabia, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Anu. I really also thank the members who are present, and I think we should do something in the future about the lateness or the absence, and certainly the absence without notice or absence without leave. Please include that in the minutes, Anu, that I've said that. This is a serious matter.
Sure, will do.
This is the beginning of the program year. And we have some matters that should be voted on, and certainly many matters, all matters, should be taken in by the committee members, and to the extent possible, discussed. Anyway, going to the first item on today's agenda, it's the review and approval of the agenda. And do I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
So
Sarah,
moved.
so moved.
Oh, and Sarah has it, and I'll second it. Pat?
All votes to approve?
Aye.
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 No objection heard. The agenda is adopted. Let's see. Mr. Ipanti here?
He is, yes.
Oh, good, good.
We do have the minutes to Chair Calabia for approval.
I'm sorry.
Would you like to get the minutes approved?
I missed that on the agenda. But okay, we discussed it before and during our meeting in July, we talked about the oversight report which Maggie Butler gave us. We heard a Metro performance report, and we discussed the jurisdictional eligibility bill. All in favor of adopting the approving what we discussed at the last meeting and what we
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
and which we very briefly itemized at our last meeting. that is in last week.
No, this is Sandy Newsell speaking. Tino, this is we're supposed to be approving the minutes for the July bus and rail subcommittee meeting where we talked about bus signs and for the Better Bus Network, and we had a couple presentations about that, and I can't remember the other item on that, but this is to approve those minutes.
Well, as I mentioned, on July 7th, we heard Maggie Butler give her oversight report. We heard from Jordan Holter and others about Metro performance, the jurisdictional eligibility bill, etc. Do I hear an approval of the minutes which we mentioned last Monday and which I just abbreviated today? Motion to approve. Are there objections to the amendments? Do I hear any approval or any objections to the amendments? Am I muted, Anu?
We can hear you.
Well, not hearing a vote of approval or disapproval, I'll postpone the vote until the next meeting, which is next Monday.
So Tino, this is Sandy Newsell again. I'm jumping in. The meeting minutes we're trying to approve were from July 14th for the Bus and Rail Subcommittee. Where we discuss the 2025 summer shutdown phase two for the Green Line. We discussed the Better Bus Network update, and we discussed the s proposed bus stop signage.
Yes, now I recall.
Okay. That's what we're approving, and I vote that we approve those minutes.
Thank you. Assess a second.
Second, Sarah.
Any objections? Hearing no objections, those minutes which Sandy clarified, those minutes are approved. Now, can we welcome Mr. Eponti? Is he here?
Yes, he is, and he is unmuted. Mr. Panti, the floor is yours.
Hi, and welcome. We received an amazing packet from you giving your assessment and what is being done and what remains to be done. Given all that, unfortunately, with the kind of budgeting from the federal level and probably with things that can't be accounted for on your part. There won't be, for example, the FBI headquarters moving to Prince George's. There are other things like that which maybe you can even mention that were anticipated and which now may not come about, and which will definitely affect the budget for your plans. Mr. Ponti?
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. Yes, we've completed the transit vision plan. And so it was finalized and adopted by the County Council. So that is our official roadmap for transit development for the next 5 years in the county. We understand that things have changed from when we started working on this plan. Right now, the focus is on us implementing our year one action plan, which involves a lot of short-term fixes, such as making improvements to our bus stops and other related customer facilities. The economic landscape is also evolving right now, and so we're working with different partners and our county leadership team on priorities so that we can better serve our residents and visitors and connect people across the county and into the metro system. So that has really been our priority right now. Other things that we've been doing is really moving forward with our fleet improvement plan. So we've really embarked on buying new buses for the system, as most of our vehicles are due for retirement. So for over the past for the past or the last 6 months, we've received some new vehicles. We've received more than 20 new vehicles to help ensure system reliability and also to give a better facelift to the system. And we're also in the process of acquiring more vehicles for our paratransit system as well. We still plan on implementing microtransit in the county, which is something that was really central to our transit vision to improve accessibility and mobility for folks throughout the county. And that plan is continuing. We've been working with vendors, we've been working with our internal partners to collaborate and come up with the best strategies in terms of the timing for setting for us to launch our microtransit. We're also working with our technology providers to see what technology can best fit our needs in terms of microtransit and demand response services in the county. I also want to say that since we implemented the Better Bus Network redesign plan, we've also seen
plus 1 3 0 1 3 6 7
improvement
5 3 5 4 incoming call
in
plus one
our.
3 0 1 3 6 7 5 3 5 4
So we've seen some improvements in our ridership. Our ridership has really grown. And we've seen that weekday ridership has improved. We've also seen some changes in our weekend ridership. It's not been as impressive as we expected. So we know that WMATA is covering a lot of weekend services, but we hope to really go out there and talk to our residents and do some more outreach so that people understand where we're providing service at this time. And those are some of the highlights on what we've been doing. We're still looking at the data. We're still trying to understand how the travel patterns have changed. We understand that a lot of people they're still getting a little confused in with the new changes which we did and which WMATA did. So we're still gathering information, and we hope that at some point later in the fall, we'll understand some of the changing needs and expectations, and we can make changes accordingly to meet the needs of our riders.
Does that conclude your report?
Yes, sir. Yes, it does.
Okay. Well, let me mention that the advisory committee's first vice chair, Denise Rush, a year ago or maybe even more, was brought to attention the matter in Prince George's County. And at the time, she said that there were areas that hadn't been served. And in your final printed report, you do mention where those areas are. For the record, could you name them again?
Are we talking about Just help me out. Are we talking about the areas where we're trying to expand microtransit?
Both the microtransit or services by regular buses.
Okay, great. So our strategy to improve services in the county is one where we've taken a multi-phase approach or a multi-pronged, a multi-phase approach. One is we want to expand microtransit. We currently have one microtransit zone in the county, which cover Clinton and Oxon Hill. So we want to expand microtransit into five different zones.
With the zones or what the areas are or the places
Yes.
that people more people are familiar with, the place names.
Yes. So in the southern part of the county, we want to split the existing microtransit zone into two zones. One that principally serves the Oxon Hill area, and one that serves Clinton area, so that we can better connect people to different points of interest. We also plan to introduce three new zones, one in Bowie,
Louis.
well, in Bowie, correct, another zone in Laurel, and one other zone in West Heightsville.
Very good.
So those are the five zones that we plan to implement over the next couple of years.
Okay. One last question. The assumption always is, and you take that into consideration, that w there will be adequate funding. But given recent events at the federal level or at the local level, I assume that, for example, there once was a hope that the Federal Bureau of Investigations headquarters would be out there, which would mean more riders, things of that sort. This probably doesn't appear in your report, but are there budget limitations or shortfalls that you can mention at this point?
None that I can talk to about at this time. At this time, we're moving our plan forward accordingly. There's not been any changes. Our leadership team hasn't said we're gonna reduce our budget, so we're moving forward to implement service as we had planned for. And that's where we are on that. We understand that a lot is changing around us, and we're still providing service at the levels that we planned for last year, and that was approved by the budget, for this current fiscal year.
Excellent. Anu, are there hands up for questions to Mr. Bhante?
Dear Calabria, at this point, I'm surprisingly not seeing any hands up. But if any of the members of the AAC would like to make ask any questions or make comments, please do so now.
Okay, this is Sandy Neuzel.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Can I ask Mr. Aponte clarification? Sometimes I can't understand you very well. I apologize, my hearing's not the best. But you mentioned that in the first year you're going ahead with, did I understand, improvements in bus stops, or was that just you're still planning them? Do you actually have any plans on the books to do any physical improvements to any of the bus stops or sidewalks at this point?
So the two things that we're doing to improve bus stops, one is we're working to install additional shelters in high at high ridership bus stops. So we plan to do that. The other thing that we're doing is that we're working on a comprehensive bus stop improvement plan, which is a planning document, and we're also gonna do some design work for about a lot of bus stops. So we'll take it corridor by corridor. We'll do some design work, and that once we do the design work, we'll follow up with implementation. I am not certain about the timeline for that project, but that is something that we're committed to do this year. So we'll select bus stops for each corridor. We'll go ahead and do design work for the bus stops, including bus shelters and other accessibility improvements within the vicinity of the bus stops, including connecting the bus stops to sidewalks.
Okay, thank you.
On what he just said, on what you just said, Mr. Bonte, does that mean there will be new bus stops where there had not been services?
Yes, we've already done quite a lot this year in terms of bus stops as part of the Better Bus Network redesign implementation. We collaborated, we worked with WMATA and other partners to install new bus stops. Some of them are temporal, but some of them we're gonna make improvements because in some areas we just had to install like a bus stop flag. But as we're going down the list right now, the areas where we're planning to install like a concrete pad for the bus stop, there's some areas where we're mapping out sidewalks and providing that information to our roadway team, so that as they move through the county for to do roadway repaving, we can add some concrete work there to connect sidewalks. So you will see some improvements at bus stops. It may be safety improvements, some may be a concrete pad, others may be a installation of a bus shelter.
And these bus stops, or at least some of these bus stops, will be built where at the moment there are no bus stops and no services. Am I right?
Yes. In some areas, we're gonna install bus stops. I mean, bus shelters at places where we currently do not have a bus shelter.
Like, Bowie and Laurel and some of the other places you mentioned.
Yes, we'll do that. But I also want to be a little bit cautionary in terms of the county do not own the right of way on so many roads in the county. We have to coordinate with SHA. So the areas where we want to do some bus stop improvements, but it's contingent on us getting the right permits and approval from SHA, and SHA may own the right of way on certain roadways. So we may have a plan to do that this year, but we may not be able to do it depending on whether we get the approval from SHA on time for us to do the bus stop improvement.
But at the moment, those places that you roughly described, there are no services there.
We've expanded our services in Laurel and in Bowie. So for example, WMATA used to provide service from Bowie State University, connecting Bowie and New Carrollton. The bus is doing that right now. And so we've expanded our service. So we've expanded our bus stop footprint in terms of additional bus stops in communities where we serve.
Anu, are there any other hands up?
Yes, Chair Calabia, Patrick Sheehan, followed by Tawan Farmer, and then Vanessa Coles. So, Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank
Sure.
you very much for that report, sir. I appreciate that. A couple of questions. I haven't had a chance to read the your report, so you have me somewhat of a di disadvantage here, but a couple of questions regarding the high volume highways, I guess, that we're talking about. We're going to be installing sidewalks along some of the routes. That's part of what we're doing, and lighting for these bus stops.
Yes, in some areas, yes, the design work that we're gonna be undertaking may require us to install or connecting sidewalks, or for us to do some crosswalks and other safety improvements or lighting at the bus stop. Yes.
Right. So that's a lot. That's a lot of work putting the infrastructure in. Sidewalks will be how wide?
I'm not sure at this time. Again, we're gonna do a study and a design that is part of the design, and it's gonna be context based. So in some areas we don't have connecting sidewalks to bus stops. The design work and research that accompany that design work will determine what we do.
And you used a term there that I probably should know, but I don't. Was it SSJ? What is that?
SSJ is the State Highway Administration.
Oh, SHA. I'm sorry.
Yes. So SHA.
Yes.
Is the business unit of Maryland MDOT.
Our friends at SHA, very good.
Yes,
we've done some very good work in Maryland with State Highway Administration, particularly when it comes to intersection design and accessible pedestrian signals being installed. They've been doing that for about 25 years now at all new intersections. So, from an accessibility point of view, they've done a good job. Back to the bus stops then. The bus stops that you'll put in, are they going to, we've seen various designs on the bus stops. What kinds of amenities would the bus stops have? Can you give me an example of a bus stop that we could expect in the future?
I think the transit vision plan, we kind of talked about what we consider a good bus stop, which has it does have seating. We're making sure that we follow universal design principles to make sure that the bus stops are accessible. We also want to really prioritize safety at the bus stop. So in some areas where need be, we want to ensure that there's proper lighting. And then we also want to ensure that the bus stops are connected to sidewalks. We don't want to put bus stops in places where it's going to be an impediment in terms of traffic, or it may be a safety hazard. So we're really trying to make sure that as we start thinking about how we design bus stops, and that is why we're going through a planning
and
design process, so that it's not just something that somebody thinks this bus stop may, you know, this stop is suitable for, you know, or this particular location is suitable for a bus stop, and then somebody comes and pinning, you know, a flag.
Mm-hmm.
Really
mm-hmm.
want to take it through a very clean, clear approach.
Good.
In terms of looking at the data, looking at the roadway condition, looking at the ridership, and then making it an informed decision about where to place the bus stop and how the bus stop should be, you know, should
Good.
Look like.
So we're not great. So we're not looking at anything like floating bus stops or the remote bus islands. That does no designs like that.
No, we're not looking at that at this time.
Yay! You get my applause. I think you get Tino's also. That's good. I would say that this is pretty exciting. I mean, infrastructure is not always exciting, but I think it's great, particularly since I remember that you had, I think in the previous report in 2018, there was 26 miles of sidewalks that needed to be built. So it's good to get started. I appreciate the fact that you want to do it right. You could take the easy way and just slap a pole in there, but I'd much rather have a bus stop design that is well lit and permanent with seating, all of that sort of thing. So I applaud that. And I would say, Tino, I'll just say this. Anything that this committee, subcommittee can do with the full support of the full committee to bring any issues back to the board of directors, we're happy to do that alongside you, because this is putting the infrastructure in is great. And I'll take a look at those high capacity lines. I don't know if through DMV moves, whether we're looking at any bus rapid transit or bus stop prioritization. I know you've been in those discussions also. So hopefully that's all part of the mix going forward.
Yes.
Mr. Ponte, you probably have some bus stops that the kind that we're looking for. Is it possible for you to make a picture and share pictures of the best bus stops that you now have, which might be replicated eventually when sidewalks and such are built? Could you provide pictures of the kind of bus stop that we need, which you already have?
We can certainly go out there and look at what we have. And I don't know if yes, we can do that. We can share pictures. We may not have bus stops that have everything that we're thinking about the bus stop of the future and how we want to go ahead and do our designs, but we'll do our best to make some, to go out there, take some pictures and share with the committee.
We're happy to work with you, and we want everything that we want. We'll advocate for everything we want. We may not get it all, but we can certainly advocate for it, and that's great. I appreciate that work. My last question, so bus stops and infrastructure is a big deal. Sidewalks are a huge deal. Appreciate that. I know there's going to be a lot of work on that. Of course, we all wanted this probably last week, right? But we'll take it, and I appreciate the hard work. On the five micro transit bus areas, one of the things that we asked for was expanded time for those, whether I know we had some that were open at 10 o'clock and closed at 3. So what are the hours of these centers, and are they going to have any weekend services?
I don't have that information right here with me,
Okay.
but for each zone, we use a very context specific approach in the way we design the microtransit zones. So we don't have like a universal start or end time because there's some zones that tailor to commuter needs more. But there are some other zones where we're targeting people who are taking very short trips within the zone. So I don't have that information
Right.
handy with
Okay.
me, but I
We
can share that information
yeah,
with
we'll get that. I know that was something this subcommittee was looking for. Last question. You mentioned something about the bus being extended out to areas within Bowie. Does that mean that the paratransit is now going to be going out there, or is this already something that's being done and we're just increasing the service?
So the two things here, our local paratransit system, which is a supplemental paratransit system that is provided by the bus, goes everywhere in the county. WMATA comprehensive paratransit system follows a 3/4 mile rule. So I can speak for Metro Access and how the delivery of that system is currently being done. But I know that as part of the compact, Metro Access goes where the bus goes, with
With
one half a
the with
mile.
the when you say the bus, you're talking about your Prince George's County
Yes.
system called the bus, right?
Yes.
Okay. There are two
So
different ways you could interpret
we have the
that.
bus, which is our fixed route system here. But we
Right.
also have Collie Bus, which is our supplemental paratransit system.
Right. Yes. Oh, right. I know that Collie Bus and the microtransit routes don't support paratransit. At least that was my understanding. But the service called the bus. If that extends out, then paratransit would extend along those routes too.
Yes,
Yes.
that is supposed to be
Okay.
the case.
Good. Good. And I hope that the governor is very supportive of all the money that you're requesting for Prince George's County. I certainly know that I'll be looking at the plan and will certainly enthusiastically push towards getting everything and more that you guys want.
Appreciate that.
Thank you, Tino. That was about six questions.
Anu, there were other hands up.
Yes. So next is Tawan Farmer and then Vanessa Coles. Tawan, please go ahead.
Thank you, Anu. Tino. Good afternoon, sir. Ms. Avanti, thank you for coming on again. Two questions. So one, as much as you can answer based on what you just said, since we were just talking about microtransit, let's ask that question first. And that is, we are going into a new calendar year for the Accessibility Advisory Committee, as well as our subcommittees for Bus and Rail and Metro Access. So there's always that possibility that we have new people on the call. So in a very general or high level, as we like to call it here at work, a high level explanation, can you explain what the microtransit service is, just to give clarification to those on the call who may not be aware of it? That's my first question.
Microtransit is a demand and response service, and it's based on real time. So rather than doing the traditional, advance booking, you can go through the app, you request a ride, and the ride should be within 15 minutes. You should be able to be picked up from your location and drop off. So in a very short way, microtransit is demand and response based on real-time booking.
And that's done via an app, or can a person who's, let's say, less tech savvy, is there a number a person can call? And what's the limitation of range for an individual, let's say in Bowie, who's taking that service?
So the microtransit service is zone specific. So if you're in Bowie, you can only travel within the Bowie zone. You cannot travel outside of the dedicated service area for microtransit.
And how can you book the trip? That's what you were mentioning. Is it strictly an app, or is it done by can you call a number?
You can call a number, but we also have an app where you can book trips through the app.
Okay. I'll table that, and let's transition to my second topic, and that is related to, as bus stops continue to be revised through infrastructure and the other elements you've talked about, my question is more of a technology-based question from my point of view, and that is, will the bus stops that are obviously already in place and any new that come into that are integrated or improved, will they be marked as part of Metro Pulse, which is one of the apps that are used in real time, so that people can have real time tracking of the bus? And will there be a marketing effort to ensure that persons with disabilities, seniors, will have access to that information to know what their bus stop is marked as via the app, if that becomes a part of the development?
That's a really good question. At this time, I do not know. It is something for us to think about and consider, but at this time, I just cannot give you an answer to your question.
I am hoping that with that question now being on the table, you will be able to return to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee sometime, ideally in the near future, with a more detailed answer. I do not wish to put you on the spot. I just want you to have awareness that that is a concern, at least of mine, and hopefully of other constituents of the Bus and Rail Subcommittee. So thank you very much and hope to hear from you again.
Thank you.
Okay. Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Yes. Hi, this is Vanessa. I'm middle-aged African-American and have my hair layered and I have a t-shirt on. Thank you, sir, for attending the meeting. Appreciate it. The last time you or a representative was here, we had some people from the Bus and Rail and some constituents that had questions about the, I guess, desert areas. So this microtransit was kind of a new term or something new that some of us here in PG, because I am a resident of PG, was not familiar with. And I wasn't sure if that was something that was enabled because people needed to get to the harbor or to, you know, to the gambling areas. So is that where it mainly is right now? Take them to the harbor and you're trying to expand that system? And then is it, what is that? Something, I guess, sounding like something like Ubers that you can schedule trips, because I'm a resident and I don't take the bus. I use Metro Access, so I'm unfamiliar with what this transit system is. So did it come about because they needed transportation to get people to their jobs? And are you now trying to expand it so that people can get within their city area or their zone limits? And how are people finding out about this? Because, you know, I'm sure there's other people in PG County. I spoke to some of my coworkers today. We just so happen to have been speaking about this that are totally unaware of this microtransit system.
Okay. Thank you, Vanessa. So for microtransit, we kind of started the microtransit zone.
Alert. Recoded.
During the COVID-19.
Alt Q. Leave meeting but escape. Zoom meeting.
So I think there was kind of a challenge because it started during the peak of COVID. So that information was not, we could have probably done a better job to educate people. But, you know, it started during COVID. And we've operated this system for the past couple of years. We have just one zone at this time. That's a zone in Oxon Hill and it serves Clinton area. It was not started because we wanted to connect people to the National Harbor. It does not serve the National Harbor at this time. The primary reason that we created the microtransit zone was to connect people to most of their health for shopping and healthcare. So we realized that there were some areas, pockets in the county where we did not have fixed route service. And where people just wanted to make very short trips to either go to the pharmacy to pick up their medication or to go to a Walmart or a grocery store to do some shopping. And that's why we created the microtransit to fill in that gap. And the current microtransit service was purposefully designed to fill that gap for very short trips where people can attend, again, do the medical needs as well as shopping needs.
Alert.
And it's a great service. I mean, I'm glad it's there, but again, like Tawan was kind of hitting at, is there a telephone number or a website or app that people use? Because it sounds like it's similar to what the Medicare system has. You know, they have the transit system. Well, it takes them just to their doctor's office. But how do we reach, especially in people that have used paratransit that need to do so? It does not accommodate people with accessible needs or special needs.
Alert.
It does. It does. accommodate people with special needs or accessibility needs. We have we utilize vehicles that have wheelchairs, and we try to provide the best the best quality of service that we can provide. I will share information about microtransit with Anu so that he can share that with the committee members. Because the microtransit zone was limited to just setting sensors blocks or to a specific area, when we did the marketing for microtransit, it was very targeted to those communities where the service is currently operating. So we didn't do like a big countywide campaign. We just targeted
Alert.
the community
Very.
where the service currently operates. That's how we did our marketing for microtransit.
Okay, it just seems so specific. I mean, who determined that that was the area that needed the service, as opposed to, by the subway? Well, I don't know. Are you trying to pick up areas that Metro Access is not, or WMATA is not servicing, or that the bus is not servicing? What are you trying to capture? I'm not understanding how this came to be. I don't understand it.
Yeah, that's a good question. What happened is that we had some areas in the county where there was no bus service in that area.
Right, I get that. Yes, I get that.
That was a target. We were
Oh.
targeting areas that there was very limited options for people to travel. So those were the priority areas that we targeted for
So
microtransit.
the National Harbor and the over there where the Tanger, that's not an area that you cover, because at one time you didn't have a way to get there. So,
Yes. So what happened is that we came up with a prioritization mechanism on what area needed microtransit or needed transit the most at the time when we implemented the service. And based on that analysis, the Oxon Hill Clinton area was identified as the area that had the
Alert.
biggest gap.
Sherry C has left the meeting.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad to know that you guys are going to be extending the services. And as was mentioned, we would love to be assistance wherever needed to help determine the best places. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. And Ifan, yes, anything you need to share, please email it to me and I'll be happy to distribute it within the AAC.
We'll do that.
Thank you. Chair Kalabia, at this point, we don't have any additional hands up.
Are there any members of the public? I know that the comments from the public comes at 5:45, but Mr. Aponte is here now, and if he's gone before 5:45, let's hear from the public now if we can. About, I know you're
Okay. So you're asking if any members of the public who are joined, if they have any questions as it relates to this topic, which is the PG County bus service.
right.
Sure. I'm not seeing any hands up at this point, and I'm not sure if we have any members of the public from the jurisdiction.
Okay. Well, very good. Then, if there are no other questions, especially from the bus rail subcommittee membership.
Chair Kalabi, Vanessa just raised her hand again. Vanessa, are you trying to raise hand for additional questions, or were you
Alert. Audio now unmute.
I'm sorry,
Alert.
I was trying to lower my hands, but it
Okay,
was
I thought
lowered.
so. I had
Okay.
lowered it, so
Sorry.
parent
No
29
worries.
right parent.
So
I lower your hand, Vanessa.
there's no other questions from any member of the public.
I'm not seeing any hands up. And however, if any members of the public or who join regularly, or if any AAC members have any additional questions for Mr. Aponte, you can surely send those to me, and I'll be happy to share those with Mr. Aponte and make sure that he receives the feedback.
Okay, well then, thank you for Mr. Raponte. As always, we welcome you here. You provided additional information. And in addition to what Patrick Sheehan mentioned, I asked for pictures of your best bus stops, which may be replicated or improved upon, but I'd like to see and the members that we should be shown the kind of bus stops that you already have, which may serve as a basis or as a model for your new bus stops. Thank you very much. Thank you
Appreciate
again.
it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see, our next guest, they'd have to be a little early to arrive, but they were scheduled at 5. Are they here now, though? The guests.
Yes, Chair Calabia. So we have Cedric Watson. He's going to be talking and giving information about the Navy Yard Capital Project.
And this is apart from Mitch Nietzsche and Roland Grimaldi.
He is from the team. He's from the same team.
Okay,
Yes.
but he's the one representing the team.
He is the one representing the team. Yes.
The others are not here.
Cedric, the floor is yours.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. Perhaps he's having a little trouble unmuting himself. Cedric, just in case you're speaking, you are on mute. Okay, you are unmuted.
Is he on any screen?
I'm not seeing his camera on, but he's not on mute. Cedric, I'm not sure if you're speaking. We cannot hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, perfect. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Cedric Watson. I'm the Ellis Senior Program Manager for the Escalator Elevator Capital Programs in the authority. For those who don't know, we are in the process of replacing all the escalators at the Navy Yard station. We're currently working on the east entrance, which is the New Jersey Avenue side. The plan is to complete that by the end of the month, which will have all the escalators on the mezz and in the entrance completed. Following that, the next escalators that we will replace in the station are will be at the Navy Yard Half Street entrance, starting at the end of this month, where we'll be closing that entrance to the public. But the New Jersey Avenue entrance side will remain open with all elevators available to the public. The sequence of the replacements will be all three escalators located in the entrance of the west entrance, along with the two escalators on the located on the platform, will be replaced simultaneously. This project is scheduled duration. It's about 25 weeks, which is planned to start on September 29th and return in March 25th of 2026. So during that period, we're working to expedite the replacement of all the five escalators located on the west entrance so that we don't extend that work impacting our customers. Any questions?
I have none. Anyone else? Any members have questions?
This is Sandy Newsell. I'll ask a question. I'm not real familiar with the Navy Yard. I have been there a couple times, but I think from your description that at any given moment there will be escalators at either one end or the other end of the station that are working. And given that you're on the ELEFs, including elevators, will there always be an elevator option for people in wheelchairs?
Oh yes, absolutely. The east entrance, which is located on New Jersey Avenue, will be accessible to the public, provided both elevators, one off the platform to the mezz and from the mezz to the street. Those escalators and elevators will remain open for the duration of the project.
Good. I was sure that you'd thought this through. I just wanted to be clear.
You're welcome.
Here, Calabria, Sarah Rod had raised her hand, but it's lower now. Sarah, did you have a question?
My question was basically the same as Sandy's. Thank you.
Okay.
And to Juan.
Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you. My question is actually just more of a very general statement. As over the last few months, I've been attending Nationals games, which fall right there primarily out of the Half Street entrance exit for the Navy Yard. I think that it definitely sounds like you've timed it well, as unfortunately for the Nationals, the season is coming to an end, which will significantly, although there are many a restaurant over there, will probably reduce the overall foot traffic for some time while we're working through these projects. I know that the New Jersey entrance is obviously the U.S. Department of Transportation's larger footprint is on that end. But since you're planning to ramp back up what sounds like March, which will support a return to spring season for baseball and the amount of foot traffic, I appreciate that you all are timing this as you are to make better and more newer escalators and elevators for that station. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Per Calabria, this is Anu. I do not see any additional hands up.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir, and we hope that you're able to complete as efficiently as possible, and we look forward to any reports on future progress in other stations. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Let's see. Now we're going to have a discussion about the budget.
You had an interest to discuss next big transportation bill?
Yes. Well, let me see if I can get a document that I have here to help me with this. Well, basically, when we think about the upcoming budget, we hope we don't face another fiscal cliff as we did before our last fiscal year. And that fiscal cliff was there, and many of us had hopes that the problem could be alleviated by some federal help, as we had through the pandemic emergency funds, which are now disappearing. So, in order to avoid that again, we really should understand what the fud federal budget, how it's arrived at, and what we could expect from it. As you know, the country has been autocentric for decades and decades,
and especially at the time of the Eisenhower administration, which began the interstate highway system, which built or reinforced roads and highways from east to west and from north to south. In doing that, cars and most of them at that time, no, all of them at that time were gasoline powered. And of course, the federal government levied taxes on gasoline for these kind of vehicles. The level of funding derived from the federal taxes has not appreciably been raised, although most states and a few localities within those states have all had taxes and have raised those taxes. But even with those raises, two things happened. One was the development of improvements in the efficiency of gas engines running cars, and also the advent of the electric vehicles, and as well the hybrid vehicles. So in a sense, both of these factors have cut into the support we could expect from the federal sector. And because of improvements in gas, well, the introduction of electric vehicles, many of the gasoline taxes that were built on gasoline, the gasoline mileages, that's plateaued or become very limited. And especially since the federal government, its revenues for localities has remained stagnant. the problem of the shortfall due to gas engine improvements and hybrid cars has diminished our revenues. In any event, because the federal government does at least or has in the past provided basic budget for our buses and our railroads, it hasn't done so for much of the kind of operations that local systems need. And one of the things that I did in responding to the invitation that the federal government had put out for comments for upcoming budgets, what I did was try and emphasize the need now for the federal government to do what it did during the COVID years, but continue it and increase it for future years. And that is the increased funding for operations. That has to be done. And maybe it's even more important now because under the current White House administration, the Secretary of Transportation and others, but the Secretary of Transportation has said that it would now prioritize funding for transportation and to areas, regions with higher birth rates. Those higher birth rates do not necessarily include WMATA and other systems in big cities with not higher or rates that are rising. So while we're hoping that the report from the DMV moves people, which were scheduled to come out in June and were said then to come out in September or maybe October or as late as November. We hope that they can do something about this. We don't need another fiscal year cliff coming up, say, in fiscal 27 or fiscal year 28. And one way to help really reduce the possibility of such a disaster, a fiscal cliff, is for the federal government to begin to budget more for operations, as well as continue for the purchase of buses and rails, etc. on that score, the latest, as I mentioned to Patrick, regarding helpful from the DM Moves group, the information I've seen is not up to date. And is Patrick still there? If he is, Patrick, could you tell us if they've met or released the report in June, or when they plan to release the report?
So Tino, yeah, we right now I don't have any indication. I know we have a meeting in September that we'll be attending. They didn't give any timeline. I think October, November is probably when they expect to release some of their findings. I think, just to summarize what I said, I think at the meeting last week, there was $500 million, I think I have my numbers right, back in 2018 that WMATA was given for a rainy day fund, let's call it, but that wasn't indexed to inflation. And then all of a sudden you had COVID hit. So the money that was not indexed to inflation was spent much quicker than it was expected. Nobody expected COVID to happen, and what happened, all the transit functions. And so that's part of the reason why we ran into that fiscal cliff a couple of years ago. And FY28, WMATA's borrowing power ends, basically, or very, very closely slows down. And so what the jurisdictions have talked about is putting in $500 to $600 million between Maryland, DC, and Virginia into funds that are going to be indexed for against inflation, which is good. I think they said 3%. So they haven't figured out the logistics of all of that. Funding in jurisdiction in the states and areas is complex, and we all know that. They were looking at mechanisms for doing that, and I think I indicated last time that they had they were looking at a sales tax. You had four or five people that liked it out of the group of maybe 15, and the other 10 basically said the jurisdictions know what they need to contribute according to fund their compact funding that they already go by. It is up to them to come up with the money that's needed. And of course, you had some of the jurisdictions hemming and hawing a little bit about maybe they were giving too much for too little and all that sort of thing. But they will work that out. I think that the region as a region knows that there is a, that there's an urgency that they need to get going on this, because we're in what, 26 now? At 27, they really have to have a plan coming forward. So that I think the funding piece is the more complicated piece. Everyone's aware of where we were at the fiscal cliff 2 years ago, knows how we got there, and absolutely don't want to avoid that. I also heard that as far as cutbacks are concerned, and we all don't, who knows how it'll go, PREA and the other federal funding that is given through transportation thus far have been pretty secure. So it's looking not totally bleak, looking okay, but who knows in the future where that's going to go. So that's kind of the summary that we have. October, November, I think would be a good time to start looking for that. Of course, you'll get the Randy's budget in probably December, preliminary budget, and that's of course what we'll react to come January in the spring.
Is what we see in December, as issued by GM Randy Clark,
Yeah,
will that be
that's
the basis for dedicated funding,
No,
dedicated
I
means?
no, I think that when the dedicated funding comes up with respect to the DMV moves, my guess is that's going to come from the co-chairs of that from that organization, which would be of course WMATA and Paul Smedford and Randy Clark. Do I have that right? I'm not sure. From COG. They would probably make that announcement on that. I think that's something that's still being negotiated, and the other part of it is the timetable of how it happens. That's as complicated as anything else. As you know from Virginia, they have a more complicated funding mechanism than, let's see, Maryland might have, or even DC. So there's lots that has to be looked at, but I think transportation is. It's a pretty cohesive subject right now. I think we're working towards some good improvements. But funding it, you're right, it's going to be complicated, but they don't have any other choice. It's either you get the money in or you have to cut back services. Nobody wants to cut back services. The good news, the other piece of good news is that the amount of transportation in bus and rail has been increasing over the last, what, 12 or 18 months, 52, 54 months of, I missed Jordan's presentation in July, but I think it was 52 or 54, 56 straight months of increases, which is pretty good. I think it's one of the best recoveries we'll see in the nation. But still, there's a lot of work to be done, and there's a lot of capital improvements that need to happen, to keep this system going forward. But they have a plan for it, and we'll see when that plan comes out. And then executing that plan will be critical.
Well, again, in the past, and I'm sure in the future, we could sure use help from the federal government in terms of operations. I mentioned the business about the pronatalism, which is a affects the vision of the federal government. And I just located what I found earlier. This is the Department of Transportation Order 2100.7. And basically, it says that preferences will be given to communities with marriage and birth rates higher than the national average. It also will prohibit recipients of Department of Transportation support or assistance from imposing vaccine and mask mandates. So what will happen when states do that, as some were talking about? I think Florida has been talking about it, but they backed off a little bit, or at least there's some talk that they may back off from such things. They also will base their funding on whether the states or localities require local compliance or cooperation with federal immigration enforcement and with other goals and the objectives specified by the President of the United States. And that is Department of Transportation Order 2100.7. It was signed, but I could not find a date on when it was signed. But at worst, or at best for us, maybe it's not in effect But anyway, that's it as I read it to you, and it has been signed by the Department of Transportation Secretary. That kind of leaves things up in the air, but in a bad way. We never had those priorities on states and localities, this kind of higher marriage and higher birth rates. And since we're not in a region of higher marriage or higher birth rates, that could be another flaw in our vision for future funding. So anyway, the latest I could find, apart from what Patrick has been able to tell us last week and today, is this. The headline is, as WMATA's new budget goes into effect, future funding woes remain. Future funding woes remain. And that is from the Greater Washington newsletter. And it's July 1st, 2025. As Patrick mentions, there may not have been a meeting of the DMV moves people since then, but they've got, it apparently appears to Greater Washington that they've got to overcome these funding woes. Are there any further questions about how the federal government funds localities, especially in terms of maintenance?
Sure, or, Columbia.
Yes.
Debbie has her hand up. Debbie, go ahead.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, Debbie, I can hear you.
Thank you. Sort of fundamental to all of this is with all of the changes and cutbacks in staff employees, I would think that there will be a moment or a cliff at which point we're going to see potentially huge cutbacks in usership of the public transportation system in today, not necessarily, well, wherever there have been historic government centers, with all, whether it's Bethesda or White Oak or downtown, FDA, Beltsville, all these places, have we seen changes yet? And to what extent will that impact ultimately budgets and the system as a whole?
Well, Patrick mentioned that ridership is a bit up, and that's good. That'll provide some revenue. But who knows how long that will last? Lots of feds have already been fired or been reassigned. Another agency was slated to go to, I think, Alabama. It hasn't done so yet, but it was just announced yesterday. Now, as these federal agencies diminish, either by having employees who are fired or laid off in some way, or the whole agency is shifted off to a different state entirely, that's going to hurt us badly. And that's why I hope that whatever DMV moves comes up with, that it's flexible enough that it'll ride with the loss in the funding that we have now or that we expect. If it doesn't do that, then to me, I wonder what dedicated funding means.
Well, one of my questions is also perhaps these short distance micro transportation projects that were mentioned earlier, those might be the where flexibility gets built in, because people may not come for the from further outskirts into the city, but people will look for transportation more local to where they are. So just wondering how all of that may be or how that will get adapted into DMV moves, because all of it was predicated on what was current until about 6 months ago, and now we've had these major changes. So I just hope that that's, as you said, being taken into account, because it will affect our metro access and accessibility if it's not.
This is Pat. I could answer a little bit of that. So one of the things they're looking at, and that and you we've seen that reported to this committee also, are increasing the efficiencies within the system. So you see that with automatic train operation, that the all the lines now are automated, and that all of that money that's being saved is being pushed back into the system. You also see the same thing with Metro Access. It's able to save money because of the Abilities Ride program that costs less than running the same trips on Metro Access. All that money's being reallocated into the system. You've had major increases in bus transit. Better Bus Network is helping with that. And you're looking at bus prioritization, all of this stuff, and the increase in the traffic hours and the different patterns of ridership, which is, I think, pretty critical right now. All of those improvements being pushed back into the system so that your money on the capital side, which they expected to have to move over to the operations side for just to be able to run the system, was cut severely back down to, I forget what it's 80% improved over what it was last fall. So Tino's warnings of financial woes is accurate. And on the flip side, you also have the other situation where the system has shown efficiencies. And if you listen to any of Randy Clark's speeches, he'll say that, you've had X amount of months of improvement in bus and rail, and Jordan Pratt might have said the same thing. So it's a mixed bag. I think we need to be vigilant. Certainly, looking at the budget when it comes out in November, December, and checking what gets reported out on DMV moves is going to be critical for the long term. I would say that what I hear from the board and what we hear from Randy and all is optimism. I think he's got a good team. But what you're also saying, Tino, is critical as far as the where we are with that fiscal cliff coming in a couple of years. So we need to be vigilant and work with WMATA to make sure the system is sustainable.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Here, Calabi, I do not see any additional hands up now.
All right. Well, as I said, I will circulate the latest thing that I've seen in print regarding the work of, the work towards a budget that we can survive beyond fiscal year 27 and 28. I will circulate that, and hopefully some of the things which the federal government has prioritized won't hurt us too badly. It amazes to me how they could prioritize areas, those few areas which have higher birth rates and higher marriage rates, and leave out those many areas that don't have those kinds of things. Let's see, are there any final thoughts apart from what's on the agenda and what we've discussed? If not, then do I, it's, what time is it now?
It's 5:30. Perhaps we could go to public comments.
Oh, yes, sure.
Yeah.
Any
So before we begin, I just want to state that any members of the public, if you'd like to make comments, we would be happy to take the begin the public comments a little earlier today. And If you're able to raise virtual hands, please do. Otherwise, if you can send a chat message, that will all be also helpful. Each member of the public will have 2 minutes. And if we have any comments, we can start taking them.
Yes, my name is Kevin Riggi. I'm not a committee member, just a member of the public. And my comment is in the form of a question. I'm really interested in a particular request for proposals regarding the Metro fare vending machine replacement. And I didn't know who to talk to about that. I'm happy to exchange information offline if that might be the best way, the most efficient way to handle this, but I just wanted to get an update on that particular solicitation because I'm really interested in the new fare vending machines, the replacements, and I didn't know if that contract had actually been awarded by Metro. It's unclear in terms of the status, and so from the online information, and so I just wondered if there's someone who might be able to help me track that down or put me in the direction of the right staff person at WMATA who might be able to do that.
I know we've had presenters come before us regarding fare vending machines. I don't know them by name, but do you remember them by name, or can you?
Yeah, I can help him. Thank you.
Good.
So,
okay.
I'm sorry. Did you say your name is Kevin? Kevin, if you
yeah,
can,
my.
Send me a direct message in the chat.
Yeah,
and
I don't. I'm on a Zoom because I couldn't get access to the Zoom address. I'm just calling in. I just had a phone number to call in, so I wasn't able to. I'm not looking.
I can give you a phone number where you can call us during business hours, and
that would be good.
We will be able
Yes,
to help you.
Thank you.
It's 202-962-962-1100. And we can.
So that's 202-962-1100.
Correct. And
Great.
We can get you connected.
Great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Kevin, could you briefly pose your question to the committee?
Yeah, I just wanted to know what the status of that particular fare vending machine replacement project request for proposals was. I know the proposals came in, but I never heard about whether it was actually a vendor was actually selected to do the work and connect with those fare vending machines in all of the metro stations. Really interested in the topic.
Okay. Well, Anu will try and help you by connecting you to the kind of people who have made presentations on fare vending machines. So, Anu?
Okay. And Chair Calabia, we have Deborah Dunaway next.
Hi.
Deborah, start speaking. Your timer will begin.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Could you identify yourself?
Yeah. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I had sent this to Barbara Millville. I didn't send it to Mr. Blake, but this morning I woke up and saw that they were talking about the elderly and the burden of the bus stops in Brooklyn. And I was wondering, because of all the problems with the new bus system, if those people who are having trouble are going to be allowed to, or if it will be suggested to them to apply for Metro Access, because it is very hard to walk uphill. It depends on which way the street is going, and there are a lot of stops in between missing, which definitely creates some problems for some people. But it was on WDC on the news this morning. It was like a 2-minute thing.
Is Barbara with us?
Yes, I am, Tino.
Oh, okay. Could you try and help out with an answer or information where it could be
gotten? Yes, I will. Thank you. Surely will.
Oh, so will you provide a bit of an answer now, Barbara?
I'm not able to do that at this time.
Okay. All right. Do we have her email or telephone
yes.
number?
Yes, I have her. I have Deborah's email address and telephone number.
Very good.
Oh, I did have one question, though. I feel so dumb about this. It happened to me in the last committee meeting. How do I raise my hand? Why am I? I've been able to do this in the past, and now I'm not able to click on anything that.
Deborah, are you connecting through a phone or?
No, I'm on my iPad, and I've never had a problem with this before. I'm sorry to ask about a technical thing, but I can't, no matter how many times I hit it.
This is Tino. I have an iPad, and under reactions,
you can
press reactions, and there are a variety of things that you can use, including raising. If you have an iPad.
Yeah, I got it. I just thank you very much. I mean, I don't know why they put that there. That is so dumb. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for telling me that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
They moved it around a couple of times. It's fooled me sometimes too. Are there any other questions? I just lowered my hand now.
Calabria, I do not see any additional hands up.
Sandy has a hand up. Sandy, you're muted.
Yes, if this is an opportunity I can speak, it's a little bit off topic. It might be more of a Metro Access meeting, but can I go ahead since we seem
sure.
to?
Sure.
Okay, so I've had trouble with arriving at the correct address at a place I'm going, even though on the map you would think that the address I want to go, which is 6251 Old Dominion Drive in McLean, is a specific building. But apparently multiple buildings have that address, including one that's on the other side of Kirby Road. It's not even the other side of Old Dominion Drive. And so my Metro Access drive drops me off at a completely different building on the other side of a busy road that has no crosswalk. And well, if it has a crosswalk, it certainly doesn't have any good line of sight, not that I can see that well, and no traffic light to help, and no pedestrian signal. So I am perplexed. How does one figure out how to, you know, put in an address if Uber is going to apply the wrong address? I'm completely bamboozled when, you know, this is above and beyond what Philippa has been dealing with. You know, legitimately, the corporation or the entity applies the same street address to many, many buildings. And I'm like, anyway, I just wanted to air that, and I will share it with Mr. Blake in writing at some point via Anu, send it to Anu.
This is a constant problem, Sandy. Have you tried phoning the person that you want to see and maybe getting a suggestion for a better address to give the Uber driver?
I've asked another person in this complex what their address is, and I might try that address and go to their home next time and then walk to where I need to go. At least I would still be on the same side of this busy four-lane street that I can't cross. It's very perplexing what Uber does and what the post office does to label addresses.
Yeah, you shouldn't have
to. And what I would...
You shouldn't have to, but if you could talk directly to the exact person you're trying to meet or visit, now that's a hardship. But if you're able to do that, maybe they can give...
Another question. Does anybody on this call know how to change the location of their PIN where you want to be dropped off for an Uber ride? That's another thing I could try. It's a struggle for me to see the map and move, but I'm not even sure I can move the PIN. And I've asked a couple Uber drivers, how do you do that? And they're like, I don't know. So
Right.
anyway.
So a couple of things. I just because I hear this a lot, and again, Uber is a promotion. It's a convenient promotion. And you obviously are independent because you've taken a lot of trips on Uber. I know I had a conversation similar with Vanessa, who had a similar situation a few weeks ago in some of these locations. Obviously, I don't create addresses and why someone would put an address on the side. And one thing I do say, we always are willing to help and share with Uber or any company, although this comes up a lot more with Uber apparently, addresses and challenging addresses. But one thing that I would also say for customers is that that's one of the reasons we have brought on other Uber-like companies that are door-to-door service and will provide you a lot more support than an Uber is designed to do. And when I would ask customers in some cases, if sometimes you don't know before if it's your first time going somewhere, but if you know you're going to some places that may be challenging and support would be beneficial, simply ask MetroAccess not to put that trip in the lottery for Uber that day. Because that's one of the reasons we brought these other companies with the door-to-door. Now they have limitations and more limitations than Uber does on the mileage and time of day and things like that. So there's always, give or take. But I don't want any customer to feel Uber is all they have. Metro is the safety net. These other companies are providing door-to-door in an Uber-like experience while we're still working with Uber on certain addresses. But I will say this, and again, I haven't even looked at your situation. We'll look into that. Just taking a peek at the situation Vanessa, Ms. Coles brought up last week. You could just imagine if Uber changes the if there's a building, one address, multiple locations, all and not right next to each other. If they change the address or the location for one customer, now they may be inconveniencing another customer. I don't know how much influence we have to do that. I'll tell them Miss Coles is very special, so we need to take care of her. But if you get my drift, they have their geographic ways of doing things. Certainly, they're not perfect, and I'm not making that case at all. But within the general scope, we're working with them. You let me know. I do my best to advocate on your behalf. And that, not that you need my help advocating, but I'm just talking to Uber. But also, we've made available other options that will help mitigate issues when you come to certain places like you're describing.
And one of the people who worked at this establishment said, well, when she's trying to go to that other building that I thought had a different address, but now seems to have the same address, she said she has better luck using Lyft than Uber to get to the
Yeah,
address.
that's what
So
I keep hearing.
is that an option in the Metro Accessibility's ride these days to ch for
To
you?
choose Lyft at right now, no. I'll just say this, and this wasn't really something I talk about in public, especially when we've been working or talking with them for a number of years, really from the beginning of this program. There seems to be some sort of there's interesting things going on in the Lyft corporate world. Let's put it that way. They've got to figure out certain things. We are very excited to bring them on board. They're trying one more time. I could just say that. And I could tell you some of the team members are anxious to get going, and they've got some exciting stuff, and I can't wait to announce it. But we have to get all the I's dotted, the T's crossed, and the legal I's are really, there's something, I'm not sure what it is, and we've tried to ask them, but there's something that makes them hesitant. And I said, no, these are the sweetest customers you're going to find anywhere in the country. What's the problem here? So the answer to your question is yes, I believe in decentralization, a diversity of suppliers with all their special aspects to their unique services. We want Lyft to join in. We're doing everything we can to encourage it and support it. They really have to just make a decision that they want to be a part of this outstanding effort that we have going on here.
Okay, so in the meantime, I will detail my experience today, another person, her experience today, trying to get to an address. She's coming from Vienna, I'm coming from Reston, we're both going to McLean to meet, to do our job, to give a presentation, and then we're trying to go home. We both had trouble both arriving at the correct address and getting Uber, well, the Metro Access ride, Abilities ride to pick us up at the correct address. It was a three ring circus. I'll detail it for you, and I'll
Please
send
do.
Through a new to send to you.
And I'll follow up. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chair Calabria, we have Deborah Dunaway. Did you raise your hand again for additional questions?
I did.
Okay. And then we have Philippa Mazel. So Deborah.
Let Philip go first, just because I shared once and I want to be fair. I'll go after him.
Okay. Thank you. Well, thank you. This is Philippa. Mazel. That's fine. I appreciate that. Since we are on the subject of Uber, I was just going to say that nothing has changed. Once again, you try to call the driver. I try to call the driver 2 minutes out from the pickup time so that they shouldn't have anyone in the car at that point. Most of them won't answer the phone for me to guide them. But one guy coming to my home did answer the phone. And when I told him where I lived and described it, he said, oh, yes, I know that building with the Circle Drive. He said, yes, they always take me to the alley behind your building. Mm-hmm. But coming back from 2150 Pennsylvania Avenue, a main thoroughfare, 4 or 5 blocks from the White House, I go to a building. I'm on the Pennsylvania Avenue side. They constantly go to the back of the building, which is I Street. And they don't answer the phone. I think I got canceled 3 times the last trip I took. They kept canceling because they wouldn't answer the phone. And finally, someone answered the phone, and I was able to tell him to come to the Pennsylvania Avenue side, and he did. But, that's like an extra hour waiting, when you're ready to go. I understand this is not it's not a friend picking me up or a taxi that I can hail on demand. But I just think it's ridiculous to have to wait all this extra time because they don't pay attention. In fact, I had to call Metro Access and they told the driver what to do. And I don't know what they do that I can't do that the drivers, that the message gets through. I'll send text messages to the driver, everything, nothing works. And so when Metro Access got involved in it, where's my ride? Then they sent the message and I think it was the third Uber did come to the appropriate spot.
No.
So just, and I hope you can get Lyft. Can I help?
we'll tell them that you support them highly coming in, but let's not have the members get involved.
It was a joke.
Yeah, I got you.
It was a joke, but a lot of people tell me they don't like Uber and that Lyft is much better, that it does take them to the right spot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yes. I'm glad to hear you guys are trying and I appreciate it. And I still appreciate Uber, I would love if they take me to the front door of my home. I mean, okay, but anyway, thank you. I'll bring it up again next week.
I understand. We're still looking into that, but yes, I'm trying to bring you more options, including one that you probably would prefer.
Oh, one more. I heard when I called today to book a ride, which they wouldn't book because they said I'm expired on the 12th, but I did call and get it extended. I already sent my information in last week. But they said, would you like an Uber or a cab? So what is the deal with the cab?
Well, that's just practicing, but it's really no different because we haven't changed the computer system yet, but we're practicing because there's been mention of the federal government here, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but there are some folks who have, different perspectives than our previous regulators as to the amount of choice and options the customers have. And so we're preparing to answer questions through changes that may be coming along to address their concerns.
Okay, now with the cab, what would that be? Like the $7, whatever that DC. Oh.
No. That's different. No, this is just saying, like, so quick, and we have about 17 different options under Abilities Ride these days. You're probably
Wow.
not aware of that yet. It's
Nope.
really grown, and it's almost unfeasible. If you could imagine, you calling in to book a trip, and then you have to choose between 17 different providers as an alternative. Well, we're not going to do that.
Right.
But what it would be is, in the case of taxis, well, in your case, it would only be three choices for the pickup. If you're getting picked up in Washington, D.C., there are only three of the taxis that can pick you up in D.C. that we're working with. If you're in Prince George's County, well, you actually only have one taxi. If you're in Montgomery County, you have two, and Virginia, you have one. So you'll be getting an option of, but instead of you having to remember a name, let's say you're going to Montgomery County and they ask you that, it shouldn't be, in our opinion, it shouldn't be on you to have to remember 17 different names and where they work out of, and all that kind of stuff. This is just a test. Nothing's going to change. Most of your trips, if they're selected for Abilities Ride, will likely still be on Uber, but in the future there'll be more name engagement in terms of offering choice. But this is really just practice. Nothing else
Okay.
is going on.
And what is the fee for the cab?
But this is, I know I don't mean to interrupt, but we do have three more
Oh yeah.
people. Oh, okay. I see.
Abilities Ride trips all right now still remain free of charge, but that will change in the future as well. And I've been saying it for 5 to 7 years, but at some point
Okay.
there'll be a fee for those trips. But right now they're still free.
Thank you.
Deborah Dunaway, followed by Rico Dancy, and then Susan Bourmaster. Deborah, when you start.
Thank you.
Sure.
I have to, Mr. Blake knows, I have been asking for Lyft for over a year because Uber does stupid things and they take a long way around sometimes that doesn't make sense, etc. But I'm not going to go on that. I have had problems, and I'm sure some other folks have too, being on hold for a supervisor for an excessive amount of time. We're talking 40 minutes. Mr. Blake knows this because I have sent that to him when finally it's just enough, because then I'm sitting here just to change a location because I've got to get picked up in a different location from an Uber because the business is closed or it's dark or whatever. And it's on the same street. I mean, these are simple things that I think should be able to be facilitated. I had problems when I called in. Okay, here's the problem. I call in, where's my ride? I get where's my ride, but I don't get dispatch. Then where's my ride transfers me to dispatch after I tell like my whole megillah of whatever, whatever. And because who's ever on where's my ride can't help me anyways. And then if dispatch can't book an Uber, or and I have definitely said to these people, tell me if you're just sending me to a team, because I can't just sit here with maybe 9 minutes left. I mean, like a low battery. I can't, just sit there and do that waiting. There's been problems with disconnection from Tim, and I am trying to wrap fast. The call center, to answer to Philippa, but I don't use the cabs because the call centers are overseas and they're all using the same call center. So I don't do that because they don't know our area at all. They can't
Oh.
help. It's dispatch. And there's also been some registration problems with eligibility when it comes to getting a pass for a different location, 21-day pass to go to Delaware or Baltimore or whatever. They're really not processing our stuff at all. So I had to refer to Ms. Millville about that to get some assistance. And the information, they have been quite rude, actually. and very non-accommodating in eligibility. I don't know who's answering the phone, whatever. I don't know who's doing the training, but that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah. Susan, go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry, this is totally unrelated, but I have been here since the beginning of the meeting and I was not able to unmute to identify myself. If you could possibly mark me as here.
I noticed your presence. Thank you, Susan. Yes.
Can I just respond real quick? Because there was a lot said there. Number one, the design is not for every customer to be able to talk to a supervisor, because paratransit service in general is not a service where you book a trip the day before and then we're having thousands of customers calling in, changing pickup times, pickup locations. Yes, I've tried to make this as flexible and easy and comfortable for the customer as possible. But if you're calling in, not just about where's my ride, but I need a new pickup address, I need a new pickup time, I need the change, that's not what the system is designed for. And therefore, waiting for a supervisor likely is going to take place. When it comes to the visitor status at other locations, Metro Access would not process a visitor status for Baltimore. We inform Baltimore once they contact us, or we can even contact them. It's okay with that. But when I hear that we're not processing their visitor status, we don't process a visitor status for someone else. We process visitor status for people who are coming here.
But that's not what I meant. What I meant was I even sent them an email, et cetera, et cetera. I kept track of it. And they were supposed to send the information, and they didn't.
Okay. Well, you know, you have my phone number. You have my text message. Again, coming on here, that's fine to say and complain, but we could have probably resolved this if you simply pick up the phone and call me, because I'm not sure who was sent the request to send some information or to who. You let me know, and we'll take care of it.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was one other thing that... Mm-hmm. The last letter of my Metro Access card is cut off, and I'm not the only one. I asked for a new one to be sent, and it was still cut off. So I don't know what they're doing with the font or whatever, but I've never had this happen where it's not appropriate.
You can send me a screenshot of your card.
Okay,
we'll take a look at it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Rico, go ahead.
Okay, I have two questions. I get pick up Saturday at 4 a.m. I have to be work at 6 a.m. I had to get to work to 6:30. They pick up two people before they drop me off to work. I tell when I make my appointments, I have to be exactly at work at 6 a.m. They didn't drop me off to 6:30 Saturday, Sunday 6:15, today 6:20. Okay. They always get me late to work when I said I have to be at work at 6 a.m., not 6:30, not 6:15. They always get me late to work.
Okay, so let me just respond to that. And I hear you, and I'm not sure why, especially Saturday, your trip wasn't selected by the lottery for Uber. It probably should have been. But again, we don't totally control that. It's really a fair and open process. But we've talked about this before. You're in Prince George's County, on one end of Prince George's County. Your job, and I'm grateful for you, is all the way in Virginia at the airport. That is not a two-hour trip on public transportation on a Saturday morning. It's just not. And so I want to get you there. Metro Access wants to get you there, but we're not a limousine service. We can't just pick you up and leave the other people on the side of the road. We have to provide service as a public transit service, a shared ride public transit service. Now, again, you surprised me, not in a negative way, when you sent your text that morning. And I'm like, how did he not get selected for the lottery, given it was very early Saturday morning? I have to look at that. And we're trying to accommodate you by keeping you in that lottery and getting selected. But when you're not selected, it's just a very long trip to where you're working. And, you know, we're trying our best to serve you. I'm going to work with this lottery, look at the algorithm, figure out why it's picking on you, if you will, and not picking you. I'm going to try to figure that part out. But on the days that you're not selected, if you see the night before, if you look at the app, and I hope you're using the app, I hope all members are, and your trip hasn't been selected for Uber or taxi, you may need to send a newer text message. I'm going to sp start spreading the love. Everybody doesn't have to call me. No, but we've got to communicate so that we can try to work through this. I have no reason or no ambivalence to not having you take an Uber to get to work. But again, the system is a fair system. But when you're not selected, that is a very long trip. And so work with me. I usually don't say that, especially publicly, because now it sounds like I could give everybody Ubers. It doesn't work that way. But when you're not selected, you got to let a new know and we'll work together.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one question about the app. It's a quickie. The
Deborah,
question is,
bear with
how
me
do I
for
get help if the
Deborah,
password
bear
isn't
with
working?
me. That's being done by Transit. Call me tomorrow in the afternoon or text me and I'll just text you the information I get from the company.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
It's after 6 o'clock, way after.
It's 6:01.
Are we required to end?
We're going to lose the interpreters, Chair Calabia.
Oh, okay. Well, if anybody else thinking in the if they
We've lost them already.
Yes, Marcy.
I said we've lost the
Already lost the interpreters. We lost the interpreters, is what she's saying.
Yes, they don't play. 6 o'clock, they're
You
gone.
have to, you have to end the meeting, Tino.
Yes. So the meeting is adjourned.
Yeah, thank you.
Meeting's adjourned. Bye-bye.